are listening to Cover Stories, a deep dive into the stories behind iconic album art with Adam Charlie O.
Vocalist and keyboardist Rick Davies and keyboard guitarist Roger Hodgson both wrote songs for Supertramp, but not together. They were planning an album called Hello Stranger. It would be about their relationship and their conflicting ideals. Their ways of life were very different. They abandoned that idea in favor of an album of fun songs. Davies wanted to keep the title Hello Stranger, but Hodgson convinced him to change it to Breakfast in America. Hodgson said, "We chose the title because it was a fun title. It suited the fun feeling of the album." The title, the explicit satire of American culture on the cover, their recent move to the United States, and three of the songs convinced many listeners that the album was a satire of the United States, a conspiracy theory the band members deny. But there would be no denying a much greater conspiracy involving the 9/11 attacks on the United States. Breakfast in America, released in March of 1979, was very different from Supertramp's earlier albums, which were more conceptual and elaborate. This album went for pop appeal and achieved it. Davies said the members of the band did not appear on their album covers because "we wanted to be around a long time and we didn't want people watching us getting older. We were a pretty imageless lot, anyway." For Breakfast in America, they asked designer Mike Dowd to create a cover. Design partners Mike Dowd and Mick Hargitay set out to capture the mood of the recently relocated Brits of Supertramp to America. Dowd pitched various illustrations combining Breakfast and America, including one of giant Cheerios rolling down Arizona's Monument Valley in a flood of milk. These were rejected in favor of Dowd's illustration of the Statue of Liberty holding an orange juice glass. Hargitay took on the task of selecting a model for the cover. He brought in a busty cheesecake model and a Tom Waits kind of Jersey girl, both of whom were rejected by the band. Eventually, they settled on a matronly woman whom Hargitay dubbed Libby for the Statue of Liberty. Libby was portrayed by the actress Kate Murtaugh, who started performing with her sisters as a children's trio before she moved on to feature films like Breakfast at Tiffany's in 1961, The Night Strangler in 1973, and some later TV work. For the cover, Murtaugh donned a big smile, an orange waitress outfit, and a name tag as she held a torch-like glass of orange juice aloft on a small plate. She also holds a laminated foldable menu in her left hand that bears the album title in place of Lady Liberty's Tabula Ansata. Her best imitations of the 1986 gift from France are seen on the record labels and in the lower right corner of the rear cover. Breakfast was a fitting welcome to Supertramp's dawn in America. Hargitay, an Englishman, also built a miniature Manhattan out of diner paraphernalia. The cityscape features the southern tip of the New York City borough of Manhattan, with the lower Manhattan skyline represented through a cereal box, ashtray, knives and forks for piers and wharfs, pancake syrup bottles, egg crates, salt and pepper shakers, coffee mugs, ketchup, vinegar, and mustard bottles, and the like, all spray-painted white. The twin World Trade Center towers appear as two stacks of boxes, and a plate of breakfast represents the Battery, the departure point for the Staten Island Ferry. All of this is seen from the vantage point of an airplane flying over New York City. The cover's motif inspired a promotional campaign that featured items like laminated menus, spoons, plates, and cans of orange juice. Hargitay said, "It's New York seen through the eyes of someone that sees it not as a gateway to the east of America, but as a gateway to Route 66. It was a West Coast treatment of an East Coast icon." Though built by Hargitay, the cover was designed by Dowd, who added a more personal touch to the back cover. It shows the band members having breakfast, served by Libby, in an old-style diner where each of the band members is reading their respective hometown newspapers. The photo was taken at a diner known at the time as Burt's Madhouse, located on the northeast corner of La Brea and Waring, just south of A&M Records headquarters. Saxophonist John Helliwell said, "The cover expressed with wry humor our mental and physical place at that time. The imagery appealed to us, living in the land of dreams and ambitions, and substituting the English Transport Cafe for the friendly diner." But wait, there is more. It seems that this Welcome to America piece of rock music artwork was warning us of the 9/11 attack on New York a good 21 years before it happened. This sterling bit of detective work was not completed until years after the attack. According to the 9/11 truther community, this album cover was never just a jokey little piece of absurdist art. It was actually a prophecy of doom. The album cover predicted the attack on the World Trade Center towers in New York. How is that possible, you ask? Consider the evidence. This frightening fact was first unearthed by Eve, a poster on a David Icke forum found online. So there is an auspicious start to begin with. As catalogued by the British tabloid The Daily Mirror, Eve's cryptic explanation of her theory is as follows, and I quote directly. Album came out in 1979. 9/11 reference. 9/11 was served with breakfast, not to mention the everyday fight for freedom. Breakfast in America. Orange juice equals fireball. You are looking out of the window of a plane. She is showing the target. Now, for those who remain unconvinced in the face of such powerful evidence, Eve went one convincing step further. She posted a mirror image of the cover that reverses the perspective of the album cover in such a way that the letters U and P from Supertramp's name kinda sorta could look like a 9 and an 11 arising from behind the World Trade Center towers, especially with an assist by a mirror and some mental illness. The orange juice fireball appears in the foreground of the towers. And if that is not enough to convince you, remember Kate Murtaugh appeared in Breakfast at Tiffany's, which was set in New York City. Now I ask you, what further need have we of witnesses? Behold, now ye have heard from these deep thinkers. Libby later went on to tour with the band, announcing them from the stage. She died at the age of 96. She was never formally connected to the attack on the World Trade Center. Let's hit the pause button and chat a bit.
Got any predictions for us? Supertramp certainly seemed to.
Yeah. Yes, they did.
Breakfast in America, an album that I'd never heard, and to be honest, never even seen before.
Really? Is that right?
Wow. So, obviously, you know, in revisiting this, or visiting it for the first time, I realized that I knew a ton of these songs.
Yeah, the songs are pretty well known. Yeah,
pretty ubiquitous. So this was their big breakthrough. They've been around for a while. Mm-hmm. British band. Let's hop the pond and get bigger.
Yeah, they were gone to America to seek their fortune.
Yeah, they were.
As many Europeans have done before.
So this had a lot of cultural relevance, whether accidental or not, in the years after its release. We'll just keep it at that. We'll obviously be digging deeply, but you mentioned that between the title of the album, the cover, and the band's relocating to the States, fans were assuming that the album was sort of a takedown of American culture. There was a bit of that floating around.
Well, they thought it might be, yeah. You know, that they were mocking us. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the airplane window seat, and there's the Statue of Liberty turned into a waitress and a very cheesy kind of Manhattan skyline. So, yeah, a lot of people thought that at first. But they were here genuinely to seek their fortune.
They were here. And, you know, I'd say you move here, you're allowed to make fun of it.
Yeah.
You know?
So yeah.
That's how it works. But
I didn't know they were British.
Neither did I. This is a quintessentially American-sounding album.
Yeah.
I didn't go back in their catalog, But it seems like this is a bit of a departure as far as like the pop structures and the straightforward nature of some of these songs.
Yes, it was. Yes, yeah. Yes, it was. It was definitely a pop move. I mean, the whole thing was a money grab.
Yeah,
you know, coming to America and all that, and this was their first album. You know, so this was Breakfast in America. You know, yeah. We're starting our career over here and
that's
all that
true.
Sort of stuff.
Our first meal.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And they had a 5-course meal, I'll tell you. But it's kind of, you know, this is kind of the predecessor to the CSN Live It Up, you know, that the mega smash that was. But, you know, I just think that the band had a healthy dose of Nostradamus in them. You know, you mentioned 9/11 off the bat, and that's certainly somewhere I want to end up and talk about a bit, but I have a couple other points worth digging into.
Far away.
The album title Breakfast in America, obviously pretty evocative name, considering the use of, you know, morning and midnight or breakfast and dinner as metaphors for progress, de-evolution, even relationships or the life cycle of any living being.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they also preempted the Reagan era, a president who famously used "It's morning in America." And while, you know, as a campaign rallying cry, I'm not trying to say that Supertramp invented the idea of that metaphor, but, you know, that was in the ether.
It was definitely in the air, that feeling.
I don't think Reagan sat down to listen to the politically charged, logical song.
Supertramp thought, if it's morning in America, let's go have some breakfast.
That's right. You could argue that Reagan was midnight in America, but I digress. It's also interesting because the calendar was just about to turn to the 1980s. You know, so it was, what, March 1979. In the 80s, I feel like, as someone who was just a child in that era, it seems to be remembered now as much for its materialism as it was for a lot of social upheaval. Something you could probably say about most eras, but the 80s in particular. Any thoughts about that?
Yeah, well, you know, in my lifetime, which has spanned from the 50s to the 20s now, the 80s are the biggest blank, you know, it just didn't seem to have too much that distinguished it. You know, it was the last time the Orioles won the World Series. Other than that, it's kind of a nothing decade.
That's right. But it was the last time before this year that the Orioles won the World Series. But I think you could also point to the three kids you had in the house.
Well, that may have had something to do with it. Yeah, it may have had me distracted.
But hey, at this time, you know, at the time of Supertramp, you only had one. So no excuse for not eating breakfast in America. So Mike Dowd and Mick Haggerty, they're tasked with making this cover, right?
Yeah. Yep.
They clearly had the title of the album before they got it, because they went all in.
They sure did.
They didn't stray from what the band was saying.
They sure did, yeah.
They said, we're going to give you a literal representation of what you're giving us.
Right down to the orange juice.
I will say, though, that mock-up, you know, of a previous idea, a giant Cheerio rolling down Monument Valley in a river of milk, may have been a miss. I'd love to have seen it.
Yeah. I love the ideas that didn't make it, but I couldn't find it. I saw something that may have been, but it wasn't terribly impressive. There was no river of milk, but there were Cheerios rolling down through a red clay landscape.
Hey, fair enough. It's like the giant donut on The Simpsons, which strangely will come back around in just a few minutes. But, you know, the now iconic cover really seems, for me, to hinge on the waitress. You know, the Statue of Liberty, the waitress.
Yeah, Libby.
So I had to look up, you know, they had first thought about having like a pinup sort of model, mm-hmm. and then a Tom Waitsy Jersey girl. But a cheesecake model, I didn't realize it was the analog to beefcake.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You didn't know that?
I had no idea.
I thought cheesecake was, I think cheesecake gave rise to beefcake. But that was that was the language of the 50s, certainly.
Yeah, well, funnily enough, the only time I'd come across the term beefcake as a kid was Brutus the Barber Beefcake, an early WWF foil. So, you know, how much would that have changed the cover for you if you had this buxom, let's say Blink-182 Enema of the State woman, but dressed in a waitress uniform?
I guess it depends on how buxom and what her waitress uniform looked like.
Maybe it would have caught your eye. Maybe you would have ended up with the album.
That's right. I don't think I would have stuck with it that long.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have made it to our podcast here these decades later, but who knows?
Yeah. But, you know, so the model, Kate Murtaugh, they call her model for this. So yeah. Kate Murtaugh, you know, this this waitress, who you could lovingly imagine is named Flo, Libby,
yeah.
You know, is sort of the platonic ideal of a quintessential American
waitress. Absolutely. I feel like that woman has waited on me 50 times at least in my lifetime.
A million, yeah.
Absolutely.
One more coffee, hon. She's working at the Bellway Diner right now.
Yeah, probably. And she's got that smile.
And she's earnest, but that's kind of what we're looking for here. So I think maybe that's why it got some attention. You know, replacing the Statue of Liberty with a figure that, to some Americans, represents consumerist culture. You know, like we all go to restaurants; every country does that. But you know, this is the Statue of Liberty. You got to be careful with what you're portraying, and people a little tender. I think Americans don't like to be reminded of our Americanness sometimes. If that makes sense,
yeah. But you know what I like about the perspective of this picture is she's looking in on the band. They're inside the plane. They're looking out the window, and she's smiling at them and saying, "I got your orange juice ready. We're all set for you. Welcome to America." But yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
But it was that American consumer spirit, I think, that attracted Supertramp.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think that's what, you know, that's why it's so evocative, because there are so many different ways to look at it, you know. But so Haggerty, his rebuild of New York City is painstaking and
it's brilliant. It's
brilliant. You know, we recently did Metallica's 72 seasons, you know, and there's this itemized list of things we have to have, but using cereal boxes, ashtrays, cutlery, and boxes to make up the world's most recognizable skyline, and it still looks like a skyline.
Yeah, and I'm embarrassed to say, I never really took a really careful, close look at this album before.
Nor did I.
But when I did, I thought, oh, holy hell, that's not the skyline at all. I mean, in a passing glance, it really works. It you know, it looks like, that's Lower Manhattan and.
Yeah.
But so they did a great job.
It's wild, you know, and the waitress, you know, just the way she's portrayed in the front on this side of the water there, it's in the foreground, that's where your eye goes. And we talked about this in what we call pre-pro in the business, pre-production. I was just asking, you know, oh, that's a really neat painting. Turns out, no, it's a photo, right?
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah, they built it.
Yeah. So it's really, really cool. I found that insane.
Built it
impressive.
And painted it white. So there was some painting, but it was, they painted the materials all white.
Yeah. Yeah. Now this, you know, this I think comes back to Supertramp not being an American band and certainly not being a New York band, which was very much a thing, very much, you know, a personality that precedes the artists themselves. But is this your interpretation that it envisions New York City as a gateway to everywhere else?
Well, that's what the Statue of Liberty was. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, people came in to Ellis Island and then they spread to the four corners of the country. So yeah, I think it's very much that they were playing.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. It's just interesting.
I'd love to know how much of this was the band's thought how much were the designers. And that I can't tell you.
And how much did the designers actually think about this? Because clearly people have had a lot of time to think about this album cover, as we'll soon find out, you know.
A little too much time,
yeah. But it's neat because New York City almost, you know, as if it's a character itself, seems to insert itself and insist on being the center of civilization.
Yeah. You
know? Yep. So it's neat to see that from the reverse. And it makes sense, you know, because we have an Englishman seeing the East Coast through the eyes of a West Coaster, you know, as evidenced by the back, you know, a diner, not in New York, but in Hollywood, right?
Yep.
The A&M offices. Man, I'll tell you, Dowd really hit the ground running on this, didn't he?
He did do that.
But quick thing, the rear cover, also fantastic. You know, it gives us a peek at the band, who was seemingly disinterested in image or being perceived at all. Didn't they say something along the lines of, oh, we don't want our faces on the cover because everyone will know when we're older.
That's right. Yeah, they
like, that's kind of how
they didn't want to see. See, they had grand plans for America. They were going to be making records for a long time.
That's true.
They were going to age, and they didn't want people to see how they changed.
That's why I burned all of my baby pictures, so I seem a little less old now.
But I like the little touch though, that they all have their hometown newspaper. You can't tell that actually.
You can't. I
from
really
the back
tried.
Of the album, yeah. But that's a neat little touch.
That is. It's really cool.
If it's true.
Well, yeah, it's true. If it's true. Can't read everything you or can't believe everything you read in the papers. And certainly, if you can't read the papers, but oh man. There'd be no other way to get into it than to just get into it. The 9/11 conspiracy nuts,
I love it,
are likely too busy on 4chan or Reddit to listen to us. But man, did they go wild on this, huh?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did.
So an online poster known only as Eve, no relation to this Adam over here, cobbles together a list of theories. I don't know what you think, but I'm going to say this. It's at least pretty weird.
Yeah, it is. And if you hold a mirror up to it, the P looks a bit like a 9 and the U looks a bit like an 11.
Certainly does. And
and it's over the towers.
Which Libby is touching.
That's right.
You know, she is
with
she is
touching. Orange juice.
Orange orange juice. Which we all know.
That's
which
right.
We all know is
a metaphor for a bomb.
Fire, right? Yeah, for a bomb.
An explosion, a fiery orange explosion.
Yeah. Orange juice, but so again, certainly weird, but in my opinion, no more odd than The Simpsons predicting the Trump presidency. Smartwatches.
Oh,
the Siegfried and Roy tiger attack.
Yeah, when you talk Nostradamus, you got to talk Simpsons.
The true Nostradamus.
Absolutely.
Beyond that, do you remember The City of New York versus Homer Simpson?
I don't remember that episode.
And I'll
remind
tell you,
me.
Not an episode you will see in syndication very often because it is eerily similar to the actual events of the day, albeit a bit less sinister, as you can imagine. So, you know, I do think that there are always going to be wild coincidences, but I like to look at it as pop culture informing and shaping society and culture.
Yeah.
As opposed to the other way around, you know. But real life Libby, though, she got to tour with the band?
She did indeed.
Okay.
Yeah. I got to announce them and introduce them.
That's really cool. I did see a picture from decades later, a much older Libby recreating the cover,
which
I thought was kind of cool.
Oh, is that right? Was it cool? Because I could see that could be a...
there's no background in the recreation.
Okay.
She's just holding up, a bottle of water.
Okay.
But it's mostly, look at me, I'm 85, and I'm still, you know. But, it's interesting.
I'm going to have to look for that.
It's cool. It's cool. I do like, though, that the band acknowledged, you know, Kate Murtaugh in that way, because we've talked at great length in other episodes about people that felt left behind, either financially or left out of the stories from the bands that profited off of them, you know?
Yeah. I doubt she got rich introducing the band, but at least she had some fun.
Yeah.
I hope she had some fun.
That's true. That's true. You know, speaking of making money off of it, sadly the band doesn't still seem to break bread together in either a diner or otherwise. I don't know if you saw this, but as recently as last month, and you know we're always right on top of current events, the four bandmates were embroiled in a dispute regarding royalties over this particular album.
Is that right?
Yeah.
No, missed that.
Yeah,
that,
they were.
It snuck by me.
They were in court, regarding the six albums they made in the 70s and 80s, which was really the period in which they got fans and sales and no more than on Breakfast in the United States. Quite an interesting deep dive. We hope you enjoyed it. Go eat some eggs.
Yeah, see you next time.
See ya.